Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar Live. Live from Berlin. Live from the European Conference on Educational Research. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, isn't it? I was just talking to our producer, Dirk Stiglitz. We were just thinking, this is only the second time ever that Sounds of the Bazaar has been broadcast so early in the morning. Nevertheless, it's warming up here at the European Conference on Educational Research. For those of you who didn't listen to yesterday's programme, we're in the Freie Universität Berlin. That's way out in the west of Berlin. It's a huge, huge campus building. I guess there's something like 2,300 delegates at the conference, we're told. And it sprawls across. You can walk 10 minutes, 15 minutes down these corridors here. And we're bringing you on Sounds of the Bazaar. We're bringing you the best of the conference. We've got an absolute fabulous program lined up for you today. Lots and lots of guests. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, so the guests haven't quite got here yet. But nevertheless, we're confident they're going to be arriving soon. In the meantime, I'm passing over to Dirk, who's going to be playing us a little music, and we'll be back talking to some of the conference delegates. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. And welcome back. Nice bit of music, mellow music to wake you up in the morning on Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Berlin, live from the European Conference on Educational Research. One of the things that perhaps we don't know much about always on conferences is publishers, but we've got a lot of publishers here. And Joe is in the publishing room. I'm just watching some hand signals here, talking to them. Over to you, Joe. And I'm not sure our microphone is picking up from the publishing room at the moment. We're just trying to get range on. It's always a bit tricky.
Okay,
knowing.
I'm here with one of the publishing team from Wiley Blackwell, was it?
Hi there. So I'm from Wiley Blackwell. We're an international publisher. We publish around 1,500 journals, about 50 of which are in education and psychology.
About 50 of which are in education and psychology, and we have sample copies available on display. We're here in the exhibition hall.
We publish journals on behalf of societies such as the British Educational Research Association, the Philosophy of Education
Society of Great Britain, and also NASEN, the Special Education Society. And as I say, we've got free journal samples available at our stand. We also have a selection of books in philosophy of education, inclusive education, language development, to name a few. And we have a 20% discount available on these books. So please come and visit us in the exhibition hall.
And why do you as a publisher come to ECR? Why are you here?
Because it's a great place to meet people in academia and also practitioners in educational research. It's a great place to network and meet people.
And how have you found it so far? Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been brilliant. We've met a lot of interesting people and there's been quite a lot of interest in what we've got on display. So it's been really good.
Okay, thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Back to you, Graham.
Okay, it's fabulous to hear from the publishers. We've been trying to get publishers on this programme for about 2 years and they usually run shy, but not this one. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. Internet radio, live internet radio, live from Berlin, live from the European Conference on Educational Research, the sounds of the summer, the sounds of the best of the conference. Sounds of the Bazaar, dirt, play us some music, and we'll be back talking to more guests. We've got people up at 10 o'clock in the morning even. Sounds of the Bazaar.
Hello from Berlin. I'm Judith and I'm now talking to Lorraine Kershaw. She is from the Edith Cowan University in Australia. I met her in the hotel. She experienced really hard times because she was not allowed to access her room for the first night, which was quite complicated. But now she has her room, she is at the conference, and she told me that she is an expert in ICT. That her research background is ICT in education. And we will now be talking about expertness in
ICT education in the integration of the curriculum. I don't know that we'll be talking about it too much because my study is a PhD and it's only in early stages. I've only just completed the data collection, and that was in a well-to-do primary school, an independent girls' school. And it's a case study and it involved videoing lessons in the classroom and a series of interviews with those teachers.
What is your theoretical background? I guess you need to construct relations to the theory as well. Do you already have an idea about this?
Yes, there's been a lot of research about what good practice is, what various stages and phases and levels of journeys that teachers make in the way that they finally arrive perhaps at good practice or expertness. And it's that that's what I've based my conceptual framework on. So I'm looking at the pedagogical practices, their teacher characteristics, and their teacher experiences, which have led them to be, well, we think or we hope, very good at practice.
The last question. You're talking about expertness. Yes. What exactly do you mean by this? And are you also referring to the everyday life of learners and students?
No, I'm not referring to everyday life and students, and I don't know what expertness looks like exactly. And that is the research challenge. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm handing over to Graham.
Sounds of the Bazaar, the Sounds of the Conference, live from Berlin. Live from Berlin, ECR, European Conference on Educational Research. Let's have some music, and we got more guests lining up now. Who said that no one will be at this conference at 10 in the morning? Welcome back to Sounds of the Bazaar. I'm not quite sure what's going on here. These radio programs could be a little chaotic sometimes. It's Judith. Judith's going to be talking to someone. Let's find out who.
I'm not just talking to someone. I'm talking to Theo Huck from the University of Innsbruck in Austria. Theo, I attended your presentation on Tuesday, and you talked about literacies and transversal competencies. I know what literacies are, and I know what competencies are, but what is transversal, and what is the relation between literacies and competencies?
Oh, well, that's a tough question. I'm not sure if it's possible to answer that very, very briefly. So I think that's mainly related to the backgrounds, you know. On the one hand, we have these enhancements of literacy concepts being applied to all sorts of areas and very different understandings in terms of the phenomena being dealt with. On the other hand, there are disciplinary backgrounds of these concepts, and those have an influence of how these fields are conceptualized. So regarding the transversal, that's a notion being promoted by Wolfgang Welsch, for example, and he was sticking to special kinds of reasoning in view of postmodern developments of plurality and how to deal with these very, very different backgrounds. So I do not agree in every respect with the concept of Wolfgang Welsch. In some respects, yes. But I think this transversal approach is very, very helpful, and you can have an explication of it in terms of metaphorical competence, for example, of framing competencies, for example, or in terms of a polylogical approach, as Franz Martin Wimmer in Vienna developed it. So you have these conceptualizations helping you to develop precise and concrete approaches in the world of transversal approach.
This is a very complex background, a very complex theoretical background. If you should tell practitioners and teachers how to deal with these questions in practice, what would you very shortly recommend?
Well, first of all, one of the first points is be very, very precise of the points of departures. Where do you start from? From which conceptualizations, themes, which are important for you and for the partners you are educating or learning together with? So just be very, very precise about and make use of these different cultural backgrounds, of these different conceptual backgrounds, of these different life worlds and lifestyles related to that, and being aware of those and appreciate them as starting points, as different starting points.
Thank you very, very much, Theo, and I'm looking forward to read future texts from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you.
Okay, Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, the sounds of the summer. Well, the autumn anyway, and live from beautiful Berlin. Okay, one of the pleasures of being in Berlin, one of the pleasures of the European Conference on Educational Research, is seeing many old friends who, good morning, who walk past you as you're going. And I've got friends from all around Europe you don't see for ages and you bump into. And we're very happy to have some researchers here who've told me that they were doing a session yesterday on immigrant women. Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Dr. Johanna Lassonen, and I'm working in the United States, in the University of South Florida, and in the University of Jyväskylä, Finland.
And I'm Marianne Teras, and I work in the University of Helsinki, Finland.
I'm Karin Kuhls, and I work also at the University of Jyväskylä as a researcher.
Okay, so who's going to tell me about the paper you presented? Johanna, you're going to do it, yeah?
Okay, yeah. Well, we introduced the results of our project, and this time we focused on immigrant women's access to workforce and to resources in the society. And really our session was very, very productive. We had three presentations and we all supported each other. And then it's very important that VetNet has this kind of forum and ESA has this forum where we can present our research results. I'm teaching also and I have a heavy teaching load, and then this research is supporting the teaching.
And I think that's one of the things we've found talking to researchers at this conference. People think that research is just simple thing. You go, you read, you write stuff. But most of the people here, I guess, are teaching as well. Tell me something more about the research you're doing.
Well, as Johanna told, we have the research on migration issues. So, but my focus is not that much on women, but on the so-called second generation. So young people's access to education and labor.
And what's the sort of research outcomes you're finding about that access?
Well, it always comes to the parents' social and socioeconomic status. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, of course, we can do also much inside in a classroom or in a teaching, but then we have to think about more broadly also the societal situation of families and how their parents get jobs and how they can support their children. They have very much hope for the children, and that's of course very good, and they want their children success in a new country. So it's not a question about that they have very much aspirations. But then how is the receiving society taking a kind of a benefit of that hope and success and their future? So I think that's the issue that is very important.
And I suppose you must have got some recommendations or conclusions out of your report, yeah? I'm going to ask you what those conclusions are.
Oh, I would say the most obvious conclusion so far, because our project is not yet ended, is that language is a very important factor why women, in the case what we presented yesterday, did not enter the labour market or had difficulties in entering the labour market. And of course, the recognition of their competences and of their qualifications. Often these women were very highly qualified from higher education, and they had to start studying all over again to get a second or even a third qualification. And even then, it was an impediment to be accepted on the labour market because of the language difficulties.
Okay, thank you so much for coming this morning. I hope we'll try and get some links to your research on the web, yeah? So this program will, like all our radio programs, be put out as a podcast after the program. And we'll try and do a link page, giving the links where you can pick up more of this interesting research. I must admit, I personally have an interest in it, so I want to make sure we have the links because I want to have a look at this work. But thank you very much for coming on the program this morning, so early in the morning here in Berlin. on Sounds of the Bazaar at the ECER conference live from Berlin. Over to Dirk for a very quick half minute's music, and then we'll be back with our next guest. And I said it was only going to be half a minute because it's very busy here. The conference is warming up, people are queuing for their coffee, and we have some wonderful guests. Over to Judith, who's going to be talking to our next guest on the programme.
Thank you, Graham. I'm now talking to Yngve Nordkvelle from the Lillehammer University, Norway. Yngve, I attended your presentation on Tuesday as well, Network 6 presentation. You were talking about a comparison between Media Education Master's Program International. My first question is, can you let me know a little bit about the systematics of the study?
Well, it was difficult to have a systematic approach to it, really, because universities present their media education programs in very different ways. And that was a part of our project to capture that that diversity. We wrote to a number of people. We emailed them and had responses from them personally with links and URLs to places to go for more information. But we are still in the very beginning of our approach. We have collected like 20 media education programs. So there are more to do there.
What do you expect? How many would you be able to collect? Is it only about 20, 30, 40 programs, or are we talking about some hundreds?
Well, we are going more broader in than we had expected at the beginning, and so we capture quite a few programs with ICT and learning, and we think that is slightly different from media education, but not always not in all our programs. So we are going very wide now, but to find true media education programs in Europe, I think we're going to be, if you're strict, narrowed down to 10.
Can you let me know a little bit about the reason why you did the study and a little bit about the results you have so far?
Well, my personal reason is that I designed a media education program for a master's level that was let down. It was turned down by our national accreditation agency, and I asked why. I disagreed totally, so I questioned what is actually a master's program in media education. And in our findings, I did do this study with Leo Piccola from University of Lapland. We find that there is such a diversity in defining media education. There are some commonalities, but there is much on the fringes of that subject. So we are fascinated to see the diversity of that.
Okay, the last question. Do you see any future perspectives or any recommendations? Is there already the point that you can give some?
Yeah, what strikes me is that we have so many students keen and interested in media, and we have so little teacher training to offer teachers in schools. So those teachers who do media education in secondary schools are without any formal training in higher education. So there's a too few educational programs. So they do many teachers do this in the blind.
Thank you very much, Yngve, and I'm looking forward to see the results.
Okay, so I'm here talking about Teacher TV with, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Mondri Yabgasigan from Budapest University, Thailand.
Okay, and you're running an online TV education channel, yes?
Yes, we produce the Teacher TV for the teacher. We share the good practice about the basic education in Thailand and from another country to share with the teacher how to improve their teaching. The teacher TV is we try to sharing the good practice from over the world to inspire the teacher to development of instructional quality management and supervision that will certainly lead to the quality of the learner.
Okay, so is it mostly in Thai or in English as well?
We have both. We have both in Thai and in English.
Okay, and how long have you been running for?
We just started this program 1.5 years ago.
Okay. And how do you feel it's gone so far?
We still continue this project for 3 years for the first phase. After that, we have to evaluate. We have to continue or disseminate. I will evaluate again.
Okay. And what sort of specific programs have you broadcast so far? Have you got any examples at all?
Yes, you can visit our website in thaiteacher.tv. You can download, you can see the sample of the program. We broadcast from 24-hour satellite cover in mostly in Southeast Asian country.
Okay, brilliant. Yes, back. 1 minute, okay. And so what kind of teachers do you aim to reach? Is it primary school education? Is it secondary school education?
Yes, we start from the kindergarten, primary and secondary and high school. We have the member around nearly 10,000, nearly 10,000 member now in Thailand, yes. Our content is cover primary and secondary school.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what's the, could you tell us the URL quickly?
Yes. For next step, we would like to use mostly in website. We broadcast more than 3,500 program in website. And now we have to try to expand this project for the 5 countries in Southeast Asia.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe, for that interview, and thank you very much for that interesting project. I find it's a little ironic that Teachers TV, which started out in the UK, has been totally closed down by government cutbacks. But it's good to see that in advanced countries like Thailand, we still have some support for professional development and education. Okay, the guests are queuing up here. And it's back to Joe yet again, who's doing a lot of interviewing today. And she's interviewing Tej, I think, who will introduce himself because I'm getting lost with names here. Over to you, Joe.
So I'm here with Tej Plomp from the University of Twente. You were at the first ECR conference?
Yes, indeed. It was in 1992. That I was chairing the program committee of the Netherlands, the Dutch Education Research Association, and we were celebrating our 10th conference. And because it was a special number of conferences, we want to make it special. And we decided it would be nice to go international because there was no international conference on educational research in Europe. So as a local committee, we proposed it to the national organization in the Netherlands, and they agreed. So when we decided to go international, I applied to Brussels, to the European Union, for support. And they said, we are willing to help you to organize that first European conference, but you have to do something for us. And they wanted an overview of national organizations of educational researchers. They didn't have a file for that. And they said, if you provide us with a file with those organizations, then you will be subsidized. At that time, I was the chairperson of IEA. That is the, you know the IEA? That is the International Association for Evaluation of Educational Achievement, conducting large-scale surveys in mathematics and science, in languages, in computers and education, civics education. And being a chair of that organization gave me a network of contacts in all the European countries. So I said, I'll take your challenge. And with my Dutch colleagues, all of them have international contacts, but my network of IA members in all the countries, we composed a list of national organizations. And I used that opportunity to invite the people to my university for the first international conference, saying, well, come to Twente the day before the conference and let us discuss the desirability of creating a European Association of Educational Research. So we had a very large group on that first day. I remember it, June 22, 1992, and we discussed the desirability of a European association. Very interestingly, everybody liked the idea. Many of the Europeans have contacts, for example, in the United States, where you have the American Education Research Association with an annual conference. And it was that idea that they want to have in Europe. So when we agreed on that, the next question was, how are we going to start this? You should know that by then already a number of years you had the European Association for Research and Learning and Instruction. They were represented there because there was an association, but they were focusing just on learning and instruction. So I asked them, are you willing to be the core, the starting point for a European Organization for Education Research, BROAD? And they said yes. So my next question was, are you willing to change your name into European Association for Education Research? And they said no, because we are a learning and instruction group. So the conclusion was, we have to start ourselves. And our meeting ended with the agreement, we will have a working group, and that working group will start on creating something which will organize annual conferences on educational research. I was not involved in that because I was chair of that organization and that took half of my time and the university expected me to be professor, so I couldn't do the work myself. But from that meeting in June 1992, evolved an international working group chaired by James Calderhead from the United Kingdom. And they had a number of meetings resulting in the next conference, which for many years was called the first conference, but not true, in Bath in the United Kingdom. And from there on, I think that was 94 or 95, and from there on we have the national conferences. But the cradle of these type of conferences was at my university, University of Twente. So it's a, for me, of course, a very satisfactory story. If you see that the 2,000 plus people are here, and that we started that all on small scale in Twente about 20 years ago.
Hey, wow. That's my story. Thank you very much.
That's a wonderful story. I'm fascinated. I think we're trying do when we do the post processing or on this this broadcast, we're trying to take that bit of the story out, and maybe we can put it onto the European Conference Educational Research's website as the history of ECR, which I think would be a wonderful thing to do. And there is, it seems, a personal memory, which, Joe, we could take all the notes so we can put the references down in the programme notes. And our last guest of the day, yes, we're overrunning, aren't we? We thought no one was going to turn up at 10 o'clock. Were we wrong? Were all these delegates out drinking in Berlin last night? Obviously not. They've been all seriously researching, preparing their presentations, and not having fun. Anyway, Benedict Gendron, my old friend from France, who's going to be talking to me, not about social capital, not about economic capital, but emotional capital. What is emotional capital?
So it's still an economics concept. So I developed this economic concept, which has been honored by a prize from the French Academy, Académie Française. So what is emotional capital? Because you have this question. So it's kind of crucial capital nowadays because it's an economic concept which gather psychology, sociology, and neuroscience research. And if I come backwards from economics of education, we usually talk about human capital, but human capital, the way I've been measured by Gary Baker, that you must know, so is measuring general knowledge what we call in French savoir, and technical skill, what we call in French savoir-faire. But what about this kind of soft skill, like self-confidence, self-awareness, self-regulation, empathy? What about those soft skills? So I went back to university and I did as an economist psychology. And I learned from psychologists. And I take into account this kind of skill. We call them behavior skill, or we call also emotional competences. So what is emotional capital? That's a resource, the set of this kind of emotional competences which are inherent to the person, which are very useful for personal, professional, and organizational, you know, matter. And you have also an impact on social cohesion. So the idea is to now to consider this kind of emotional capital, because we got evidence, scientific evidence from neuroscience, that emotional capital or this kind of emotional competences impact the learning process. We also got some evidence from psychology that this kind of emotional capital impact work performance, also on education, school performance, but also from economics of human resources, is impacting like work performance, health issue, and creativity. So it's become like very important to take into account this kind of soft skill. So we need to measure it in an economics perspective. So that's my aim and my purpose and my research. So when we, it's showing that when we use the adequate emotional competencies, you have a positive effect on the problem solving, on the way we behave, and on creativity. So why we should invest in that? Because we got the evidence and now this positive effect on it. So, and to allow what we call development for all, which will be the next, you know, conference in Cadiz about like to develop everybody, some equity in education. So we need to imply, that's implied to consider emotional capital and to invest in emotional capital, which means like to enlarge or to broader the way we assess as an economist, we measure the economic return of education. Thank you.
And that's wonderful. That's a wonderful summary in 2 minutes of what is emotional capital. Thank you for so much for coming on this morning, Benedict. And that was just a wonderful finishing point for our programme. We're going to have to go. We're overrunning. We're only supposed to do 30 minutes and we must have done 40 by now. It's been a great programme this morning. I thought 10 o'clock, nobody would come on live internet radio at such a stupid time in the morning. But I've been proved totally wrong. People have. It's been wonderful having you. Thanks again to all our guests. Thanks for Angelica from ECR, who makes it all happen for us. And thanks to the wonderful radio crew we've had here today. We'll be back tomorrow at 14:30. I think I'm just going to check that time. Yes, 14:30 in the afternoon, Central European time. That's 13:30 UK time. That's 15:30 if you happen to be in Greece and you're lucky enough to be there. But don't forget, tune in to Sounds of the Bazaar.